Peel out like a woman. Green and lavender. Your skin is light enough for winter, but not too coarse for summer fashion. And ravens, a motif of ravens to suggest your hair. Agatha! Pavel! Come and measure!
Don't worry, I called out to Lick as Rahim dragged the poor boy out of the room. This is part of being an Asha, too. During the days that Lick was being subjected to Rahim's enthusiasm for Hua, I was not without my own tribulations. My dance lessons proceeded as normal, but Lady Hami had decreed that I could now rise up one tier in my combat training. Now, no longer content to have me jump through obstacles and swing my way through bars, she made me swim underwater with weights attached to my feet. Got me to claw my way through swamp underneath streams of fire other Asha shot out in my direction, and had me face off against several opponents at once. Other apprentices simply parted the waters so they could walk, or hardened the earth underneath them to avoid the mud, or used wind as a shield to prevent their opponents from attacking. I had no such weapons at my disposal. Mistress Parmina had also decided that it was time for me to start attending parties with Lady Shadi. And this I looked forward to. The night I was due to make my first appearance, Rahim and Chesh arrived at the Valerian to help me prepare. Rahim told me rather gleefully that he had just made his first Hua for Lick, and was pleased with how things were progressing.
Guaranteed! No one will look at him and see a boy,
he promised me. I'm still not sure how the elders are going to react, Chesh fretted. Lick had felt compelled to inform his guardian about his plans, and she harbored some understandable misgivings.
Our little Luchenik's brother is correct when he says it is not against the rules for Lick to dance,
Rahim pointed out.
I do not think your charge will last very long with Death Seeker training. This may be his best hope.
The worst we can do is fail,
Fox pointed out.
They'd still force Lick to join the Death Seekers. I don't think they're going to sanction either of you, and I don't really care what they decide to do with me. The most they can do is send me back to the grave, which isn't much of a threat. It's Tia I'm worried about.
I don't think they're going to punish me, I said slowly. They'll stick chores on me, humiliate me a little, but I don't think they'll expel me. They think I'm too important for that. Chesh glanced at me and smiled faintly. I also think you're smarter than they give you credit for. The Hua was of a modest design. Tiny butterflies climbed up its sides, white against a cornflower blue background interspersed with small lilies. Rahim showed me how to tuck the waist wrap around me to prevent any folds and ungainly creases in the robe. A small elegant spell made from some of the vials prepared for me by the Dawnseed apothecary had been woven in. But, try as I might, I could not detect their magic. Only a faint sense of them, but nothing else.
Of course,
Rahim snorted when I asked.
They would not be worth their price if anyone could.
Chesh showed me the kinds of hairpins and combs that went well with the dress. Tonight I wore a tortoise-shell comb adorned with tiny diamonds that would help inspire gaiety, and a hairpin with white flutters and an aquamarine gem set on top, which has a soothing spell. As always, I wore my crescent pin. Then she began to paint my face, showing me how to use my color sticks and pigments to properly contour my face.
I think you're ready, she said, stepping back.
I glanced at the mirror and my mouth fell open.
I looked amazing! We didn't come here to help you prepare and expect different results, child.
Chesh laughed.
You'd best get going. We don't want you to be late.
They waved at Lady Shadi, Fox and I as we left the house. This time, other apprentices hurrying past stopped to bow to me as well as to Lady Shadi, and I felt very grown up in my new outfit. Unlike that night at the Falling Leaf, my Hua fit me perfectly. The Chahana was looking better than when I saw it last. Parts of the garden that had caved in during the undead rodent's rampage had been fully restored, and some of the rooms gleamed, shiny in their repaired newness. I still could not quite get over the guilt that I felt for destroying it in the first place. But Mistress Peg was most forgiving. In fact, she was ecstatic.
"We're booked solid until winter," she informed me, nearly giddy in her joy.
She pressed something into my hands. It was a small envelope customarily used for giving tips. I had never heard of a tea room mistress handing one out to an Asha before a party began. I started to protest.
"Mistress Peg, surely I can't..."
"Don't think about it," she assured me, still all smiles.
"Here's one for you too, Lady Shoddy, for all the help you have given Lady Tia here. Now, hurry up. Your guests are waiting for you."
I didn't know what to do, but Lady Shoddy tucked the envelope inside her waist wrap and bowed, and so I did the same.
"Good luck,"
Fox said to us before resuming his post outside the tea room. Mistress Peg led me to the exact same room where Zoya had made me entertain Prince Kuntz and his friends all those months ago, and I was sure she could hear how hard my heart was pounding. When she slid the door back, I was almost disappointed. Prince Kuntz was not inside the room, but Kaelin was. With him were other boys his age, also clad in the black he was so fond of wearing. To my chagrin, Zoya was also present, and two of her friends, Yanka and Brahit, I remembered.
"If it isn't the Valerian girls!"
one of the boys hooted, rising to his feet, extending both hands to us with a large grin. He was tall and muscular, built for a fight.
"And it's the Dark Asha, too! Come join us, pretty ladies! We don't bite!"
That set off a chain of laughter among the rest, and for an instant, I thought about fleeing. I knew the necessary etiquette when it came to dealing with people, but as Mistress Parmina had pointed out already, the theory paled when it came to practice. To my relief, Lady Shoddy took charge.
"Don't tease her, Austrey," she scolded him. "This is her first party, and we should be making her feel at home. Come sit between me and Kaelin, Tia, and I'll introduce you to the boys. You've already met the Duke, haven't you?"
"The Duke?"
Kaelin shrugged, still glaring at me. He had not displayed such hostility before. He addressed Lady Shoddy instead and did not look back in my direction.
"I never told her. We're not in the immediate line for the crown, so we tend to be glossed over in your history lessons."
"Kaelin is the son of a duke,"
Austrey said.
"The Duke of Holsrath, to be more specific. King Telamane's own brother."
He scratched at his unruly red hair.
"Unfortunately, the rest of us come from humbler origins. I am Austrey of Mirith. My father runs a pig farm there. So perhaps you can refer to me as the Duke of Hog."
"Ignore their idiocy," Lady Shoddy said, but she was smiling. "They leave Kion tomorrow, so they're trying their best to get drunk before then."
"Idiocy! Lady Shoddy, you slay me!"
One of the boys grabbed at his heart's glass in mock pain. "You're all leaving tomorrow?"
"Except Kaelin, that lucky bastard. He's manning the fort here while we go chase after Deva,"
Austrey said, gulping down his drink.
"And who better to hunt it down than a room full of death seekers? But I'd much rather be here, drinking on Empress Alex's tab and being entertained by pretty ladies."
"Not the best attitude to have before leaving to fight Deva,"
Kaelin said with stiff disapproval.
"Oh, lighten up, your lordship. We've got one last night. Where's the attendant? We need some of those alut they like so much in Yadosha. This wine is not doing much to get me drunk quickly enough."
"Aren't you one of Tia's friends?"
another man asked Zoya.
"You were together when that accident here happened, right?"
"I suppose so."
"I suppose so? That's an odd answer. Are you or aren't you?"
"Little Tia here has friends who think shielding her from all sorts of harm is the best way to teach her how to be an Asha. I don't believe in such nonsense. If she wants to tread the waters of the willows, then the best way to teach is to throw her into the river. There is no better way to learn to swim than when you are struggling to keep your head above water.
That's a harsh way of putting things, Lady Zoya.
Isn't being a Death Seeker the same way? And yet you do not mind.
I suppose it pains me to see beautiful women placed in such difficult situations.
We are not paper flowers that easily rend and tear in the wind, Alsran.
You must try to be nicer to Tia, Zoya, Lady Shadi chided.
That's none of your concern, Shadi.
Zoya flashed me an artificial smile.
Some wine, Lord Alsran?
Lord Alsran did want some wine, as did most of the others. Yanka pulled back the door to summon a passing attendant. Would you like me to refill your bowl, Your Highness? I asked Kaelin.
No, thank you.
Kaelin only looked irritated.
Now that we have the celebrated Asha apprentice in our midst,
Ostri continued, and I felt embarrassed when all eyes turned to me again.
We must know. What did happen at the Falling Leaf that night? We deserve a first-hand account, don't you think?
Zoya was there, Kaelin said. She could probably tell it better.
But she has. Now we want the story from the girl herself.
A chorus of agreement met Ostri's words.
Well, Lady Tia.
I decided not to delay what was inevitable. I cleared my throat. I don't understand it myself. Everything happened so quickly that it's hard to know where to begin.
How did you come to be at the Falling Leaf in the first place?
Someone interrupted.
Lady Zoya says that you'd snuck into their party without anyone knowing.
Instructor Ka taught me several breathing techniques to control my temper. I employed one of them because the alternative was to rise to my feet and attempt to strangle Zoya. I was an idiot. I was barely a novice, and I didn't know the rules. I worked at the Valerian as a servant far longer than most apprentices had, and I found the rules constricting. I'm sure you know Mistress Parmina. She is a hard taskmaster.
We've had the misfortune,
Ostri said, and the room roared. She's not as bad as you think, I said once the laughter died down. She likes a clean house, though, and was always sending me out on errands. One night, I was determined to see how Asha worked in the evenings. I wanted to see if all my hard work would be worth being an Asha. So I did sneak out. I still feel guilty, thinking about it now.
Don't be,
a boy they called Mavrin said.
We've all done that, playing truant and sneaking out into the city when the Master of Arms isn't looking.
Lady Zoya, Lady Yonka, and Lady Brahit here were at that party. It was in this very room, in fact. Sir Kaelin should remember. He was here with Prince Kantz and the Princess of Arinkosho. I smiled at Zoya. Lady Zoya was kind enough to let me join them. There were too many guests about, and she knew I would be caught if I snuck back out on my own. They lent me a hua and made me up to look like an Asha.
I saw the Asha trade looks with her friends, but no one else noticed.
But then something happened.
It was a seeking stone, wasn't it?
Alsran broke in.
We'd spent hours searching for it in all the rubble. It was Lady Michaela who found it underneath the floorboards.
I felt sick, I continued. Dizzy. It was shortly after Lady Zoya danced for us. I remember someone asking me what was wrong, but I couldn't respond. And then something in my head burst. I made a gesture. And before I knew it, there were dead rats streaming in through one of the walls and a skeleton climbing out of a hole in the ground. Prince Kantz yanked me on top of one of the tables, and I must have passed out shortly after.
Ah, oh, what a sight to see that was,
Brahit countered.
The Prince of Udalia holding you up by the legs like that. Why, we could see your shift.
Impossible, Lady Shadi said firmly. Our waist wraps hold our robes securely in place. Was Tia's waist wrap dislodged in any way?
Well, yes,
the Asha floundered.
I suppose so.
I was there, as was pointed out,
Caelan said.
And accepting the fact that she was unconscious, there was nothing wrong with the girl's clothes.
Zoya gave her friend a warning look.
I must have been mistaken.
Rahit withdrew.
It was so hard to keep track of all that was going on.
But what happened next?
Austrey demanded.
Prince Kantz lifted Tia onto the table, Zoya said. And we got to work trying to stave off as many of those rodents as we could. The skeleton was easier. It was Prince Kantz's own ancestor. Imagine that! But it was a difficult job. We were worried we might accidentally burn down the tea room if we drew in fire, and the ground was beginning to cave in. And little Miss Asha in training here slept through it all with a smile on her face.
I think you, Asha, exaggerate many parts of the story, Alsron said,
already drunker than the rest.
The length of leg you can display while wearing the standard hua, for instance. I am more interested in investigating that matter further. What if Lady Brahit was right, and it is possible to see one shift despite the waist wrap?
Lady Shadi rose demurely to her feet. She tugged lightly at her waist wrap, gathering the cloth from underneath that kept it securely in place, and then lifted her dress to display a pretty ankle.
See how difficult it is just to show you men that much?
Every male eye in the room was immediately drawn to her. Brahit and Yanka eyed her with thinly disguised scorn. But for a few beats, Zoya's heart's glass pulsed a deep scarlet. This was a new side to Lady Shadi that I had never seen before. There was a reason, I realized, why she was popular. And very clever. My story was quickly forgotten.
Let's make that a challenge,
Austrey proposed, taking another swig of his drink.
How about we play a round of worm frog snake and test Lady Shadi's claims?
A round of approval met his words, and I watched, a little bemused, as Austrey started off against the Asha. The other boys yelling out,
Worm! Frog! Snake!
In the background like they were 8-year-olds in a schoolyard. Worm beat frog. And soon Austrey was shucking off his shirt amid catcalls. They tried again, but Lady Shadi was either skilled or very lucky, and soon Austrey had to take off his belt.
I surrender, he said. I respect Lady Shadi's skill too much to be losing my pants over it.
Fortunately, the wine ran out, and since none of the attendants were in sight, I elected, being the most junior of the Asha present, to run out and get more. Relieved, I slipped out of the room, pausing at the gardens to gather myself. The falling leaf had made some improvements. 2 more statues were added to that of Anahita's, this time of Dancing Wind and another great hero, Ashi the Swift. I paused for a moment to stare up at the 3, taking in the crisp night air to calm myself. There was a movement to my left, and I saw a dark figure emerge from the gardens. It was clad in black, and its face was obscured by a heavy mask. We stared at each other. I swore I could feel a presence settle in the corner of my mind that wasn't Fox. Odd feelings of caution and expectation as it tested for a way in, and a telltale trail of annoyance at finding the entrance blocked. The Heartforger's stone felt hot against my chest. Without looking away, I bent down and picked up a small garden shovel that had been carefully set behind a large quarry stone. It fled, and I followed without thinking. The figure barreled through the carefully trimmed bushes and out the Chahana's gates. It moved quickly, but I kept pace behind it, thankful for once for Lady Hami and her leg weights.
Tia!
I heard my brother call out from somewhere behind me. Heard him chasing after me. But I did not stop. I should go back, I thought. But another part of me, irritated and annoyed by all the restrictions being placed on my daily life, shrugged off the suggestion and ran faster. I raced into a dark alley.
and I felt a surge of exultation upon realizing it was a dead end, with nothing there to hide behind. The figure had stopped, standing motionless before the blank wall. A small lantern hung overhead, and I saw it had no shadow.
"Who are you?"
I shouted. It turned to face me. With deliberate slowness, it reached up and pulled the veil off its head. What stared back at me was a skeleton, bleached and polished so that no trace of flesh remained. The gaping mouth grinned malice at me. From within the depths of those empty eye sockets, something glinted. The skeleton gave me no time to recover but lunged at me, moving faster in the 50 yards that separated us than it had when I chased it. My training took over, and I dove to the ground as its bony fingers swiped past, missing me by a few inches. Still on my knees, I swung with the shovel and felt it connect. The skeleton's legs gave out underneath it, knocking one knee joint loose as it tried to maintain its balance. It lifted its hand again, and I saw its fingers against the moonlight, the bones on each end honed and sharpened like knives. And then Fox's sword cleaved the skeleton's hand, cutting it off at the wrist. The fingers hit the ground with a disturbing rattle, but Fox did not stop, angling his sword so that his next stroke took its head cleanly off its shoulders. The rest of the body disintegrated before his blade could complete its arc, the skeleton's ashes sending small clouds of dust around us.
"What in a Deva's teeth is that?"
Fox demanded, staring at the skull's remains.
"This is what's been following us!" I scrambled to my feet, kicking at the discarded veil and black robes and feeling sick. I knew it wasn't human, but I wasn't expecting this.
There was no one else in the alley. Fox insisted on checking, but the street we stood on was deserted.
"We'll have to tell Lady Michaela when she returns,"
he said grimly.
"Only after she returns," I agreed quickly. "And no one else."
I could only imagine the restrictions Mistress Parmina would place on me if she knew.
"This is more serious than I thought, Tia."
"I know."
There was someone else in Ankyo who could channel the dark. And whoever it was after me.
"I'm sorry I'm late,"
I apologized as the door slid open. Faint traces of laughter wafting out told me that the party was still in full progress, that I had not been missed. Fox had already slipped away, still intent on searching the neighborhood for the skeleton summoner. Kaelin stepped out through the door and took the heavy tray of drinks out of my hands.
"Thank you, milord. Was there anything else you wanted me to—"
"Stay away from Khan's, Asha."
The air felt colder, a strong, chilly wind sweeping through the gardens unannounced.
I don't know what you—"
"Stay away from him, Tia. And if you do not, then I will make sure you do."
He stepped back inside, and the door slid shut. I remained there a little longer, until Mistress Peg found me. "It wouldn't do to keep my guests waiting," she scolded, "and I would have all the time to rest when the party had ended and my visitors had gone home." I nodded dumbly, barely listening. Kaelin disliked me. Because I was a danger to the prince or because he disliked bone witches? And after tonight, I couldn't even say he was wrong. I slipped in quietly and resumed my seat. For the rest of the evening, Kaelin said nothing, though his silver heart's glass pulsed red.
"It pains me to see these put to use in this way," she said, studying the bezoars. "We could cure the world with these, heal almost every known ailment. But I have no choice. The dozens we could save today pales in comparison to the thousands and millions we could save tomorrow. But I could not imagine how raising an army of Deva could save so many people. I feared the opposite held true and said as much. Imagine a world filled with Deva, like my friend over there. The Tauravi basked happily in the sun, tongue lolling over the black sand. Imagine the lives potentially lost by their rampages, by the people's fear. She lifted up a ruby-red bezoar from the Akvan she had slain only days before. Now imagine that these Deva can be tamed. Imagine how, under a benevolent ruler, they could right everything wrong in all the kingdoms. We could use the Deva to rid ourselves of the faceless once and for all. We could fill the world with rune berries, see that no one would go hungry or thirsty ever again. We could punish the tyrants of Drichta for your grief. Where would you like to begin? I am more concerned, I said, of knowing where it will end. She laughed, a mirthless sound. Where it always ends, Bard. With me.
17. Lady Michaela returned a week later, and I was shocked by how much she had aged in the interim. Her hair had lost some of its luster, and dark circles lurked underneath her eyes. She had arrived sometime the night before, but I found her already at the breakfast table. She gave me a wan smile as I entered, but as she lifted the bowl to her lips, I saw her hand shake, a little of the tea sloshing over the brim. "What happened to you?" I rushed to her side. She looked so thin and frail that I feared she might topple over at the first sign of wind. "It's good to see you again, Tia." Her laughter reassured me. It was still every bit as warm. "You're looking very well. I'm afraid I've been feeling a little under the weather and so can't say the same about me."
"A little under the weather, my ungainly behind," said someone by the door. "Would a 10-year war be a minor inconvenience for you, Michaela? Would a devastating hurricane be an errant breeze?"
Two Asha stood at the entrance, slipping out of their wooden sandals. The bright morning light shone behind them, so that at first I only saw their outlines silhouetted against the rising sun and thought for a moment that they were my sisters Rose and Lilac come to visit. But one was a plump woman with bright red hair half hidden behind a gauzy veil and large spectacles. Her maroon-colored hua had one of the most unusual motifs I had ever seen. Light green cantaloupes were painted at the bottom of her robes, interspersed with holly sprigs and small white butterflies. The other was almost a head taller, with dark hair cut short above her neck, a style rare among Asha, most of whom preferred to wear their hair long, and pale gray eyes. Her hua was a bright yellow, in a simple buttercup pattern.
"The Nangate took more out of you than we wanted, but it is not good of you to trivialize your health in this manner," the tall brunette continued, her voice slightly accented.
"I am fine, Polaire."
"Not from where I stand."
The brunette turned her attention to me.
"You must be the Asha apprentice people are so terrified of these days. Aren't you going to invite us in?"
"Terrified? Ignore Polaire," the plumper girl chimed in. "Where Michaela likes to understate, she is fond of exaggeration."
"But not by much."
Without waiting for my reply, Polaire entered and settled herself on the table beside Lady Michaela. She placed a heavy bag containing large twigs beside her.
"I bought a bag of fork root at Maselli's. That salope of a woman charged me an extra 3 shekels because it was fresh, hand-picked just this morning. She wanted 5, but I would have none of that. It should get your strength up, at least."
"When people gift others with fresh herbal tea, they grind it into powder first," the other Asha murmured. "Not present it with the leaves still on their branches."
"I could never figure out how to prepare these things," Polaire said. "If the recipe calls for 1/2 pound of butter and a dash of nutmeg, I would probably forget, and take 1/2 pound of nutmeg and a dash of butter and kill somebody in the process. I simply take the ingredients and shove them onto someone more knowledgeable than me. It's healthier that way. You're good at potions, Althi. Why don't you whip up some tea for Michaela here? And for me too, while you're at it."
Alfie shook her head sadly at her companion, but picked up the bag and moved toward the scullery.
"You'll have to forgive me, I'm sure," Polaire said to me. "We are old friends of Michaela here. Tia is your name, isn't it? How odd, since Alfie has just repaired to the kitchen with your namesake. But I am not one to make fun of odd names, having one myself."
"Polaire is known to speak her mind," Lady Michaela said, smiling.
"Oh, I'm the life of the party," Polaire said. "They ask for me all the time. And if anyone gets too forward, Alfie will take care of them. Alfie doesn't look it, but she can floor a man in the time it takes to raise an eyebrow. That's why she's Princess Inessa's bodyguard. But we took time off to accompany our Michaela here to Astera. Gloomy la pav of a place is Astera. Have you been? Aren't you going to give me some breakfast?"
I slid a large platter of lavash bread and some quince jam across the table. She fell on it with gusto.
Much better. Not much of a vacationing spot, Astera. Good only for its runeberry wine, elk antlers, and burly men. Exactly in that order. Stranger's Peak always has good vintage, but it's a terrible place to live. Snow piles 8 feet tall, and everyone up to their ears in mufflers and fur. If you thought Tresea was cold, wait till you've been to Astera. You will, eventually. Michaela can't take much of this any longer.
Polaire, Lady Michaela warned her.
But it's true, Mickey. You can't hide that from Tia forever. In 2 years, the non-gate will rise again. And if you're in no shape to deal with it now, then think of how much of a headache it will be when you're weaker.
Weaker? I echoed. Michaela's health is fading, Alfie said, returning from the kitchen with a bowl of the freshly pounded fork root and a kettle full of steaming water. She added the powder to the pot, then poured its contents into 4 bowls. Steam and a faint scent of spice rose up. A lifetime spent raising Deva from their graves and sending them back would take a toll on anyone. And there aren't enough dark Asha to go around anymore.
Sukhmeet died a few months ago, and Mickey had to take up her duties as well,
Polaire said.
Nasty bit of goods, Sukhmeet. Was fond of beans and thought she could pass wind and get away with it. Nastier bit of goods, the non-gate. Took more tricks to get it back into the ground than it used to. That's your last Deva, Mickey.
I can still do it, Lady Michaela protested.
Not for as long as I breathe, you silly idiot. I thought for sure you were dead when you passed out like that. And if Alfie wasn't there, I wouldn't have known how to bring you back. Passed out? See, your apprentice agrees with me.
Polaire wagged a finger in Lady Michaela's direction.
Permanent bed rest from now until the end of the winter solstice. We can pick up the slack until this one makes her debut. It might take longer, but we've got something you don't.
And she tapped at her heart's glass on its silver chain around her neck.
I felt cold all over. Don't worry your head about it, Polaire said, catching the expression on my face. Only Mickey is arrogant enough to go about raising Deva on her own. You're both rare enough breeds that whole armies would accompany you if you asked nicely enough.
The Asha scowled.
They never accompany me, though.
You're not nice enough, Polaire, Alfie said mildly.
Shut up. What were we doing here again? Oh, yes. We're here to watch Mickey drink that horrible fork root concoction that hideous Salope at the apothecary overcharged me for. And then we're going to force her to lie down for the rest of the month.
I'm fine, Polaire.
Your hand's shaking, Mickey. And there are 2 of us against you. 3, because I'm recruiting your Tia, too. 1 bowl, and then it's up to bed, Mickey.
It took nearly a half hour to convince Lady Michaela to do so, and only after Polaire threatened to draw a rune on her. She and the other Asha traded respectful bows with Mistress Parmina along the corridor, and the old woman allowed the women to drag Lady Michaela to her room. The latter's voice raised in counterpoint to the other's determination. I remained in the dining hall and stared at my bowl until my drink grew cold.
Have you given some thought to her sisters?
Polaire asked Mistress Parmina after Lady Michaela was fast asleep. Both Asha had stayed on for lunch.
Surely there are some names that come to mind.
It's too early,
Mistress Parmina demurred.
Tia has only begun her apprenticeship.
It's never too early to consider her sisters. Dark Asha need more preparation than others, and Tia would need more training than Shadi.
Where is she, by the way?
She is practicing for the Darashi Oyun at the training hall.
Elegant girl. Nabbed the main role again, didn't she?
I turned my ankles enough times during my dance lessons that Yasmin used to order me home 10 minutes in.
Are you volunteering, Polaire?
The woman sounded interested.
Of course I am. Why else would I bring this up? I know all the people who matter, and I'll teach her to liven up a party. And Alfie can teach her the other boring stuff, turning lizards into powder or something.
Medicine is a strictly vegetarian affair, Alfie murmured, Deva notwithstanding. Polaire pursed her lips.
I know Mickey would normally be the best candidate for a third sister, Auntie, but I'm worried she may not have the strength for it.
Tia will need someone to teach her the dark runes, Polaire.
Michaela can teach her when it becomes necessary, but not in her current condition. Frankly, Auntie, I'm worried. The Nangate took a lot out of her. She can't do much more of this. I don't know about you, but I would give a good deal of what I own to raise Vanner from the dead and beat the life back out of him again.
Why can't you? I asked before I could stop myself.
Why can't I what?
Why can't you raise the king from the dead and demand Lady Michaela's heart's glass? I mean, I added, somewhat flustered now that all three Asha were giving me their full attention.
Wouldn't he know?
Polaire grinned.
She thinks. That shows promise. But she thinks without thinking her way through, so probably not. Don't you think we've tried? We have had Dark Asha summon the king until they were blue in the face, and still he refuses to speak. You cannot compel the dead to obey you when they have no intentions of doing so. Hate and anger can linger long after death. It is a powerful emotion that is harder to let go than life. The dead have a reputation, and it is not for their amiability. They feel no pain, which is a shame.
Polaire caused quite a scandal back then, Alfie said. It's not every day that you get to see an Asha punching royalty in the face,
even if it's dead royalty. It felt more satisfying to use my fists, Polaire said. And I was always better at my combat training than I was at my dance lessons. I was hoping you could find someone else to serve as Tia's third sister, Auntie. I know that Mickey would insist, and I want to head her off while I can. She needs to concentrate on healing. There will be enough time to teach Tia. Perhaps Shadi might consider it?
Shadi is newly pledged, with a busy schedule. I would like to get her settled in before I start putting little sisters her way.
Mistress Parmina sat still for a few minutes. A small smile stole across her lips.
I do have a suitable candidate in mind, she said. Let me talk to a few other mistresses and see if she would happen to be available.
There is a formal ceremony for such things, Alfie explained to me. In older times, most Asha used to have only one sister to guide them through their apprenticeship until they make their debut. There aren't as many of us as there used to be, however, and there is not always time to attend to a novice, especially when you serve as a bodyguard or have a patron several kingdoms away. The three sisters system was developed for this. Lady Michaela, Lady Polaire, and I often mentored girls together in this way.
But since Mickey is indisposed, you will be one of those rare apprentices with four sisters sharing the responsibilities.
Polaire chimed in.
We shall schedule the ceremony in a week,
Mistress Parmina decided.
You are right, Polaire. We shouldn't wait.
After the meal, I snuck away to look in on Lady Michaela, who was still asleep. I watched her tired face, looked at her empty heart's glass, I looked down on my own and touched the glass with a finger. It rippled for a few moments, blue and yellow heartbeats that soon faded into its usual silver. In the excitement, I had forgotten to tell Lady Michaela about the attack. But whenever I tried to, a voice in my head would rise up, insistent. It told me that Permina would curtail my freedom and ban me from leaving the Ashika ever again. And I knew in my heart that it spoke the truth. And so I held my tongue. Lady Michaela had other more important concerns to worry about. Lady Shadi made her debut a month later, throwing the Valerian into chaos. I was not allowed to take part in all the preparations, as I still had to prioritize my lessons and the rest of my training. But for 3 days before her official coming out, there was a constant flux of people rushing in and out of the Ashika. Kana and Farhi spent a whole day cleaning the house from top to bottom. Rahim popped in and out at all hours of the day and brought 3 of his assistants whenever he visited, all armed to the teeth with piles of cloth and patterns. Chesh was also a regular guest during those days, her hands full of hairpins and combs, and sometimes she brought Lick with her, who watched the proceedings with wide eyes.
"This is only the 3rd Ashika I've ever been to,"
he admitted to me, envious.
"It's a different experience every time."
"It doesn't sound like you've been punished much," Lady Michaela told me, laughing as we watched the preparations from the safety of her room. She sat up on her bed, still looking tired but noticeably perkier. "I've been wondering about that. Why wasn't I? I must have caused so much damage."
"Don't think about it," she interrupted.
"And don't feel bad either. When you live in a district full of Asha, most Ankhians learn to shrug things off. Reparations have been made. And if anything, you've actually bolstered ours among the people. Mother would only have punished you if she hadn't gotten some substantial profit from what you've done. Why do you think she decided to speed up your novitiate?" Other visitors came and went. There were people from gift shops, some of the subordinate mistresses from the dance and musical schools, an elder Asha representing the Willows Association, people from dry goods stores and specialty food shops, and vendors from the Ankhian market. Anoush, the owner of the Dawnbreak, the tea room that the Valerian did the most business with, also called on Mistress Parmina. I woke up one morning and walked into the dining hall where Polaire and Althea already sat, only to trip over a trio of ducks that had been wandering around the table. One of them, taking offense, promptly bit me. My screams and Polaire's laughter brought him and Lady Shadi running.
"My apologies, Lady Tia,"
Anoush apologized, scooping up the ducks.
"Mistress Parmina wanted to have a look at the ingredients we will be using for the party."
"The party?" Lady Shadi smiled at me. "After my debut, the Valerian will be hosting a party at the Dawnbreak later that night. And close to 300 guests will be invited. There wouldn't be enough room here to accommodate everyone. But why would Mistress Parmina need to see what she'll be eating?" I scooted as far away from the fowls as I could. "She likes to stick her nose in everything in the belief it makes things run more smoothly." Polaire licked the paneer off her fingers before taking another bite of bread. "Still, without the meddling on her part, I would not have been made privy to such marvelous entertainment so early in the morning." "You have cheese on your cheek," I told her sourly. Both Asha had been staying at the guest house so they could check up on Lady Michaela, who was more or less confined to her room and forbidden to take part.
"Are you all right, dear?" Althea asked me. "I could put some fly jelly on the bite to ease the pain if you'd like."
"No, thank you." I stalked out of the room with my appetite gone, my hand over my rear end, and Polaire's laughter still ringing in my ears. Even though I was a member of the Valerian household, apprentices were not allowed to attend a new Asha's debut, so I remained at home with Kana and Farhi while the others were at the Dawnbreak to celebrate. For once, Lady Michaela was allowed to leave the house, though kept under close watch by Polair and Althi. Farhi still refused to speak to me and tried to stay away when she could. I couldn't really blame her. Kana was friendlier, though sometimes I caught her looking at me expectantly, like she was waiting for me to raise a dead bird or rat. Fox had business to attend to, though he wouldn't say what it was. His limping had grown pronounced as of late, but he always grinned in response and told me not to worry too much. With the Valerian almost empty and Fox away, I felt lonely. I kept to my room and practiced the day's lesson, and then the other previous day's lessons when I grew tired of repeating the same dance over and over again. The rest of the party wouldn't return until early in the morning, and the only highlight of the night was when some of the Dawnbreak's attendants arrived to give us some of the leftovers. The maids were delighted at the change of cuisine and ate as much as they could. I sat and stared at the head of a roasted duck, not feeling very hungry. It was probably the same duck that had bitten me. But for some reason, it didn't feel like retribution at all.
They were the best sisters I could ever ask for. The girl had put the fires out, thankfully. The stench remained, but at a fraction of its vigor. Steam rose from the heavy pots, hissing. She began to boil the 6 remaining bezoars again at daybreak, each in separate cauldrons. Once they were steeped to her satisfaction, she poured a generous amount into their own vials, each liquid darker than the other. Even the Deva thought the smell was terrible. It took a whiff of one of the cauldrons and hurried away, sticking its snout into the sand and blowing noisily. Polaire should have made a terrible Asha. She was lazy and inept when it came to her lessons. She sang worse than I did, had no patience with the refined arts, and was too impatient for meditation. She had terrible coordination, which meant she was barely adequate when it came to dancing. She was fond of insults, swore a lot, and had a high opinion of herself. But she was popular. She was the most popular Asha in the Willow District for 2 years before she scaled back her schedule. She was also highly skilled with runes, one of the best. Althi was different. She was every inch an Asha, a whiz when it came to herbs and potions, skilled in both dancing and fighting. The problem was that she looked more like a jovial fisherman's wife than anything else. She used that often to her advantage. I miss them both, though I don't think they miss me. Are you going to make more potions out of these, m'lady? I gestured at the pots. Why else would I stand all this stink? But I'm not looking forward to drinking them. She stoppered the bottles and placed them on a small wooden tray with the rest. M'lady, you talked of 2 of your sisters. Lady Michaela was the 3rd. Who was the 4th? She smiled wryly. Who else?
18. How long has he been dead?
Polaire wanted to know.
Who?
They called it the Kaharde, old runic for the sisters' ceremony. And mine was set to take place only a week after Lady Shadi had made her debut. The party at the Dawnbreak would be smaller, with only the residents of the Valerian and my would-be sisters in attendance. Chesh, Lick, and Rahim appeared at intervals, taking more measurements from me and discussing colors and motifs with Mistress Parmina and Lady Michaela. Polaire and Althi still made their daily visits, with Althi happily moving on to the kitchens to cook, despite Lady Michaela's protests that she was a guest. Polaire simply lounged around and did as little as she could get away with.
The man who often waits outside the Valerian whenever Althi and I come to visit. I am told that he is your brother. No, that's not right. I am told that he is your deceased brother.
He's my brother, I corrected her, offended on his behalf.
still looks dead to me. And I've seen a lot of corpses. He's getting pale and raggedy around the edges. I'm assuming you haven't blooded him yet.
I haven't what?
Has no one been teaching you?
Polaire sank back against the cushions and frowned.
No use keeping you in the dark like this, girl. No puns intended. Most dark Asha make their debut first before they get to keep their familiars. But it would appear that you are not most dark Asha.
Polaire took a drink from her bowl and then marched out of the door, returning momentarily with a piece of twig. She threw herself back down on the pillows.
See this?
With deliberate quickness, she broke it in half.
This is your familiar as he is at the moment. He receives no strength other than the rapport you share with him. And he is denied sustenance through the usual means, like food and drink. But this...
She picked up her table fork and tried to bend it in the same way she had the twig.
See how it does not break? Now, tell me why this is so.
Because the fork is made of metal, and the twig is not.
Excellent. Our blood is made up of a certain kind of metal. I am hazing on the details. Alfie will tell you more about it if you're interested. That also works the same way with familiars. If you give him a bit of your blood, he will better simulate life. He will look like he breathes, blinks, has normal digestive tendencies without needing any of them to work. And when he hurts himself, he will heal almost instantaneously with blooding. One of the many advantages the dead have over us.
I remembered Fox's limp, an injury that had never went away.
Can I do that now? I see why they have neglected to tell you.
Polaire waved a bread roll at my face.
He has all his limbs intact, so whatever aches and pains you think he has should wait until your own debut. There are repercussions to drawing runes you have no business drawing yet, as you should do well to remember every time you walk past the falling leaf.
The Asha snapped her fingers, and the twig was immediately enveloped in fire, reduced to ashes in the time it took me to jump back in shock. Polaire rubbed the soot off her fingers and then did the same to the fork. It sparked briefly, and its tips glowed a cherry red before fading again.
Just as your familiar will break like a twig until he is blooded, so will you be reduced to embers if you draw in too much of the dark. Wait until the time you are trained so you can glow like the iron in this fork.
Polaire leaned back and smiled.
Tia of the Embers. That's a nice name, don't you think? I'll be sure to suggest that to the association should that time ever come. Ah, Varhi, isn't it? And with all these special Halim. You ought to try it, Tia. Alfie stays up late the night before preparing, and the turkey melts like butter in your mouth. Incidentally, Varhi, would you be so kind as to bring in the fox boy who waits outside?
Varhi looked horrified by the command, but Polaire raised an eyebrow. The maid quickly left. Mistress Parmina forbids men from entering the Valerian, I said.
I've seen Rahim traipsing in and out of here at all times, Polaire said. For lack of a better word to describe him, man works. Familiars follow different rules. Mistress Parmina won't make changes until you petition her to. The old woman's a shrewd player, though stingy as the seven hells. I've been told you visited the Heartforger and were given a gift.
I slipped the small stone over my head and handed it to her for scrutiny.
I'm surprised he would give you something so precious at first meeting. You must have made quite an impression on the Heartforger and His Majesty.
His Majesty?
Didn't you know? The Heartforger's successor is Prince Kanz's older brother. Kanz holds some sway over the old man, though that coot won't admit it.
I froze. I remembered the sense of tension in the room, Prince Kanz's and Kaelin's reactions. I now understood why Junior's face had looked so familiar. Behind his spectacles, he had the king's eyes and the same high cheekbones as the prince.
Of course, when you're in line to be the Heartforger, You're expected to renounce all claims to your royal house.
Must be hard on the brothers, but I know Kantz has been doing his best to stay close. He's always been the unflappable of the two. It's Kalad who's the hothead.
Farhi hurried back into the room, followed shortly by my brother, puzzled and wary.
Do you know who I am, Sir Fox?
Polaire asked. He thought carefully before replying.
Yes, you're Lady Polaire from House Hawkweed. I've seen you and Lady Alticia of House Yarrow around here often.
You're observant, which is a plus. And from the way you're toying with that dagger you've got hidden up your sleeve, protective, which is even better. You've obviously done your research on us, so your brains haven't deteriorated since dying, which is something to be thankful for. If I had a shekel for every corpse who'd literally allowed their heads to rot. Today is Tia's Kahar Day. Later tonight, I want you to join the procession heading for the dawnbreak. I know you'll do that anyway, but this time, I want you walking with us out in the open instead of stealthily as you often do.
She grinned at the faint start he made.
See? I can do my research too.
And what do you intend to accomplish with this?
Dark Asha may not be looked on with disfavor in Ankyo when compared to other kingdoms, but they are nonetheless treated differently. Even inside the willows.
Polaire's heart's glass blazed brightly, not with anger but with faint disgust.
Many view people like you and Mickey as a necessary, if unwanted, means to an end. A way to take credit for keeping the land secure from Deva while distancing themselves from the hatred the commons have for them. Dark Asha never stay in the spotlight long enough to enjoy the adulation they deserve. And I mean to change that with your sister. I've seen Mickey wither and age under the heavy burden of her responsibilities, Tia. I will not see you follow the same path. And I'm sure neither will your brother. Mistress Parmina might be against it now. But if I put it in a different, more financially rewarding light, I'm sure she can be persuaded to relax her rules. What do you say, Sir Fox? Do you want to officially be part of the Valerian?
Fox considered it. A slow smile spread across his face.
It beats having to skulk about. With the old woman pretending I'm no better than shadows on the ground,
he said.
And I say this as one without a shadow.
There's something I want you to know, I began hesitantly, addressing Polaire.
What is it?
But already I felt ridiculous. I had thought to tell her of the strange figure I'd seen flitting around the willows, the shadow at the falling leaf and at Chesh's. But I couldn't manage the words.
Oh, it's nothing.
Oh, it's nothing, I said. Kahar Day is considered a private affair between a young novice and her sisters. Only the most important people in her life are invited, which is apparently more than even I had thought. I had shyly asked if Kana, Farhi, and Lick could come along. Farhi turned down my invitation, as I had expected. Kana and Lick both accepted eagerly. Chahana's most distinguishing feature are their gardens, and the Dawnbreak's most arresting character was its miniature interconnected waterfalls that flowed down into the center of the enclosure. Master Anoush was already waiting in the Dawnbreak's biggest guest room. My three soon-to-be sisters sat among the cushions in a half-circle around a low table, which held a flagon of runeberry wine and four simple ceramic bowls to drink. The others took up seats against the adjoining wall. I don't know what Polaire had told Mistress Parmina to allow her to include Fox, but it worked, though the old woman still ignored him.
Where is she?
Polaire complained.
Did our fourth sister back out so soon?
She will come.
Mistress Parmina made it sound like an ultimatum. The door to the room slid back. Zoya stood there, not looking happy at all.
Neither would